All right, welcome to Athlete on Fire. We got Sammy Schultz here. We got Tyler Carter. And in a change of events here, I'm going to have Sammy introduce our guest because she knows him. And I think she'll do a lot better better service to it than I will. So let's hear it, Sammy. What kind of intro you got over here?
All right. So we have Tyler Carter on the show today, known by TC or Captain America. he's got a little cool Captain America flag behind him there. And so Tyler is a three-time Paralympian, competed at the 14, 18, and 2022 games. The Paralympic Games, and has also competed at World Cups, World Championships in the sport of alpine skiing. And I will let him kind of dive into the different events. But Tyler and I met in Colorado Springs. He works at the Olympic and Paralympic Museum here in Colorado Springs, does a ton of work in the community. Colorado Springs is known as Olympic City USA. So he's done a lot of work with some of the community there, and just a great guy, great attitude, very hard worker. So just really excited to have him on the show here. And definitely, I mean, three times at the Paralympics, like, holy cow. That's insane.
How'd y'all meet? Were you guys training? Were you just walking? Like, did you guys meet
at the training center, right? Like, I just ran into you there one day and we started talking and became friends, I guess.
Yeah,
exactly. Just ran into each other in the gym and got to talking. I mean, I'm pretty sure you can pick up a conversation with anyone. You're just super friendly. And then at the museum, I would just do events here and there, came in for tours, and just kind of stayed in touch over the years, followed along with his journey as I was training. And then when I competed, and then kind of was like, okay, now it's my turn to cheer on my teammates for the Winter Olympics. So kind of took a different route in that sense.
Nice. Hey, Todd, so let's get into a little bit of your past. First of all, right now you live in Colorado Springs.
I do. I love it here. From Pennsylvania originally, but Colorado has my heart. It is definitely my home.
Yeah, no, I love that. What part in Pennsylvania?
Small town called Topton, Eastern PA. If Pennsylvania usually always say the major cities. So Allentown, Reading, right smack in the middle of there. A lot of people kind of, you know one of those two.
Yeah.
I'm like an hour and a half from Scranton, which everyone's obsessed with because of The Office. Oh, yeah. So, you know, everyone asks about that.
That's so funny. Yeah. So how did you get into sport, and like, what was kind of your journey, just to fill everybody in, myself included? I don't know a lot of your background, so I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. It's crazy, especially thinking like now, you know, it's we've come full circle. It's at the end, but going to the beginning, I started skiing when I was 8 at a small hill, as I like to call it. I mean, it's a mountain, but when you come to Colorado, everything is a hill that's not in Colorado. But it was a small hill in the Poconos of Pennsylvania. It was called, I think it's Camelback Mountain is the resort name. And it was just an adaptive program there. They were doing a learn to ski / race camp. I think my parents wanted me out of the house for a week, and that's really the only reason I went. It was a stay away from home camp. And I fell in love with it. So jokes on them. It actually turned out to be like way more than we ever expected. And after that camp, I was hooked. I knew skiing was something I wanted to do. And after a couple years of going to this camp, I got recruited by my club team, which I train with out here in Winter Park, Colorado. And, you know, they kind of really showed me racing and kind of a whole different level that I had never imagined, and kind of stuck with that. And then everything really got serious in 2010 when I got a scholarship to go watch the Vancouver Games. And that was like being there, being in attendance, being able to like spectate opening ceremonies, the different events. That was my like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. I want to do this. I don't know if it's possible, but I want to, you know, try and see if I can make it happen. And 4 years later, still pinching myself, I made my first Paralympic team, and well, the rest is history.
That's cool. So when you were going to that little hill back in Pennsylvania, that's why I learned on a hill in West Virginia, like very similar, like, I don't know, 500 vert, you know, your first run, because it's on ice, takes about 10 seconds, even though you don't know what you're doing. You just slide down the freaking hill. I know what that feels like. But you said you got kind of hooked up with an adaptive program out there. So how old were you again? And then how did they introduce you? How was the setup? How they get kids out on the mountain that had some unique challenges out there, you know?
I was 8, and I don't know if it was mentioned, or I sometimes forget, it's just a part of me, but I am missing my leg below the knee. I'm an amputee, so been like that since birth. I was born without my fibula, so when I was 1, had my foot amputated, and boom, you know, just kind of learn to adapt and grow. I always forget to mention it sometimes, just because it really is just an extension of myself.
Yeah.
But you know, everyone has a different challenge. I always like to say some are physical, some are, you know, mental. It doesn't matter. Like, everyone has something going on. And at this camp, you know, we focus on the physical one, but we don't focus on that. It's more of, you know, okay, you might have a disability, you might have something else going on, but how can we get you out there skiing, you know, like everyone else, like every other person on the mountain? So for me, I'm lucky that I can ski with my prosthesis. So, you know, maybe I had to modify, put a knee brace on, you know, pad the boot a little bit, but otherwise it was, you know, out there totally normal, just ripping turns, or honestly, I didn't really like turning. I liked going straight. So they would be yelling at me to make more turns, but, you know, that's just kind of how it went. And, you know, if you weren't able to stand on your legs, they'd put you in a sit ski, a mono ski, which is basically a bucket. You know, if you can only ski on one ski, you ski on one ski, and then you have these two basically poles with skis on them called outriggers, and they use them to balance. So, you know, there's tons of ways you can adapt and modify. But the big thing is, you know, we just want to get everyone out there skiing and having fun and enjoying life.
Yeah. Yeah. Just my time in Colorado. I mean, I've probably worked with, I don't know, 3 to 6 athletes with prosthetics in different aspects, whether a couple older clients and a couple young athletes. Had a kid that was racing up at the NSCD up at Winter Park, and very similar to you. He had a birth thing where his lower leg, they had to amputate, and but he loved it. Like, the skiing was his thing. And I don't know, like, if you're coming from pretty much any other ski resort in the state of Colorado or anywhere else, you know, Colorado's huge for skiing, and you go to Winter Park and the programming is going on, and you get on a chairlift, and you have somebody in one of the sit skis, which seeing those guys get on lift is freaking nuts, because they do a little bounce thing where they kind of raise up, and those guys just freaking rip it down the mountain, dude. It's so inspiring. But you know, when you see people doing things that look and seem different on the mountain, just tear it up, it's humbling, but it's awesome to see that the technology has matched the needs of so many people in the country. Can you speak to that a little bit? Maybe some stories, because, you know, like, some people don't know what to say or how to act. And I just, from working with so many different types of athletes over the years, like, it was never a point of conversation for me. We just dive in and talk about the stuff. But I've heard so many stories, so I love those stories. You got any good ones?
Oh my gosh, so many stories. How long do we have?
Yeah, exactly.
you know, it's just, you know, at the end of the day, everyone is just trying to go out and have fun. So however you adapt or make that happen, that's what's important. But definitely speaking to the technology, it's totally changed over the years. I remember, like, some of my early prostheses were, you know, they were like blocks of wood, basically. Like, it wasn't, but I mean, that was like the return you're getting from the energy. That was kind of like what the design was. It just was, it was functional, but it wasn't like, it didn't benefit you at all. It just did its job, got you from A to B. And then they started incorporating carbon fiber into it, and that just changed everything. You know, I was getting like a 80% return on every step, you know, everything I did, and skiing, that changed it, because my, you know, legs were lighter. It was easier to manage. Cause I remember one early in my career when I was racing, one of the older designs that I had, skiing down the course, like getting in the groove, having a great time. And then all of a sudden I hooked my ski on a gate and did a little spin. I went to get back from the course, and I turned and looked down, and my foot was backwards. It had just like totally like went out of alignment. Like my boot was behind me, you know, the ski was pointing the wrong direction. And I was just like shaking my head, like, dang, this stinks. Like, I wanted to win this race, and now I'm done. And then the funny thing with this race was, we had an able-bodied race, or, you know, for athletes that didn't have disabilities, like, it was going on at the same time. So while, like, for the medals and stuff, it was 2 separate races. We were all like racing together that day, and all the coaches that didn't know, like, you know, that I was missing a leg or know our stories, they were freaking out, because they just see this kid down in the snow with his foot backwards, like, worst case scenario, ski patrol's like rushing down. And you know what my coach does? He's just laughing, videoing the whole thing. I'm like, you're not helping me. You're not helping the situation. But So, you know, Ski Patrol came down and they thought I was in shock and freaking out, but it was just like, no, I'm fine. I'm an amputee. And then I went and skied down and the same thing happened with all the parents of the kids. And I was just like, well, you know, one day this is going to be a good story. And it, still to this day, that was, I don't know, a long time ago. And it's still a good story.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Sam, did you ever meet Blake that I worked with that had the prosthetic who's used to ski at Winter Park? Do you remember him?
No, I don't think I met him, but I remember you working with him.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have two young kids, they're 8 and 11. When they're about, I don't know, I want to say like 4 and 6 or 5 and 7 or something like that. We were visiting this kid and he always wore pants, but his prosthetic was on one side. And my 4 or 5 year old at the time was like, hey, I of course told my kid, the Blake, my friend, like, let's mess with my kids a little bit. I was like, hey, Wes, go kick him as hard as you can on the leg and just see what happens. He doesn't care. And my kid, like, he would never do that unless I ordered him to do it. He's like, what? No, I don't do that. I said, just trust me. So he goes over there and he kicks him and he doesn't catch him clean. He catches him with his own shin and just goes straight down. And Blake looks down. He's like, hey buddy, what are you doing? And he couldn't figure out what was going on. You know, he had to lift the leg. And like, we just teach our kids to ask questions and like, don't make a big deal of stuff. But I just think there's like little learning moments, especially for little dudes. Like you guys probably have a lot of fun answering questions because the adults are the ones who are usually the weirdos about stuff when it comes down to it, you know? So when you were back in 2010 up in Vancouver and you kind of got the fire to go train for this thing, what was the process? Like, you just start calling people or you just start training hard? Or like, I don't think most people know the process there, you know?
I mean, yeah, it's crazy. You know, you go and then you're like, okay, I'm going to do this. And then, you know, the next day you're like, how do I do this? And that, I mean, I can't tell you the amount of times and Sammy, I bet you get it the same, you know, that someone will ask you, hey, you know, you did it, you made it this far. How does, you know, my kid, you know, do that? Or how to, you know, they, or the kid, like, how do I do that? And yeah, that's a hard question because each sport's a little different. But for me, I was kind of already in the system a little bit at like a very low level. And I mean, for almost every sport, your goal is to work up to nationals and do well at nationals. Usually doing well at nationals gets you close to the national team or to a point where you can get some support funding, go to those next level races. And basically after 2010, I knew that I just had to do everything I could to put myself in a position to be named to the team. And, you know, skiing has always been a hobby, something I love. But that was the day, like the day after basically I made this decision, was that it was my job too. So I knew that every decision I made, you know, as simple as nutrition, as, you know, whether I was going to the gym or not that day, you know, my career path, every decision was, how is that going to get me on the team or give me the best chance to? And wasn't always easy. In fact, it was rarely easy. But with that mindset, with that, you know, process in place, it at least gave me accountability so that I knew, like, hey, if I'm not doing something, this is going to affect my goal one way or another. But just gave me that path and a lot of hard work, a lot of hours in the gym, a lot of, you know, not hanging out with friends so that I could focus on what I needed to. But it seemed to work out.
Nice. Did you ever have any big training breakthroughs? Like when you're early on trying to get ready for all that stuff, trying to qualify and move up the ranks?
Yeah, I'd say one of my like first big ones came in 2013. It was the season before the Sochi Games, which was my first games. And it was our nationals, actually. I was there competing and I was having a pretty rough week. It wasn't the best season. It was kind of a rough week. And I was down in my last race there. And I was kind of a little down, actually, because I was like, man, you know, I really haven't had this performance. I haven't done what I need to. The games are next year. So that means everything I have to do is going to be next season and just a lot of pressure and stress. And I was like, why am I beating myself on this? Like, you know, it's not over yet. I still have a race. I still have a run and, you know, still an opportunity and I need to capitalize on it. And I kind of, you know, like smacked myself in the face. I was like, you know, pick yourself up, you know, stop being, you know, stop crying and being a baby and go do it. And I actually qualified for the games that day. I mean, the team wasn't selected until like the following February. So, you know, there's still a lot up to, you know, do, but that put me in a spot to make the team from that race right there. And that mindset, that attitude adjustment really, really did wonders and kind of showed me, You know, one of my mottos is to not give up, because you can really accomplish amazing things. You just have to set your mind to it. And that showed it to me, like, right there. And ever since then, you know, even when the chips are down, things are not going my way, I just kind of look back to that moment and remember how I was able to make that shift and how important that was. And usually puts me back on track.
Yeah, I think especially with younger athletes, I think there's this thing where we think we control the output even before we put our full effort into it. And it can be something where basketball is always a good example because there's a lot of one-on-one in there, but where you decide like the person that you're guarding or the person that you're playing is just better than you. So you let off on the effort because you know that there's a chance they're going to get the best of you anyway. When the answer is no, you should go as hard as you can every single time. And if you lose going as hard as you can, then you know what work you got to put in. But it's so dangerous for young athletes to just assume things are over, you know, like, holy crap, Sammy could have gave up so many times on her journey because she had a crazy, crazy route to the Olympics too. I don't know, Sammy, when you're hearing him talk about that, does some of that resonate with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and just hearing, I mean, I'd love to hear Tyler about kind of your transformation from each Olympic Games. Cause I know after Rio, when I was the alternate and I missed the Olympic team, kind of, I had to shift my mindset and I was like, I'm physically just all in, like going 100% all the time. And I just felt like I needed to make a little bit of a shift going forward to the next Olympics. I needed to change more of that mental aspect of things. I knew physically I could push myself as hard as I wanted to, but that mental aspect needed to be there. And I kind of had to take a little bit of a step back. And like, someone has to kind of slap you across the face to be like, hey, you need to make this change. And unfortunately, mine turned out not so fortunate, but I may not have pursued Tokyo had that been the outcome. And, you know, I joined the military and all this other stuff. So it's kind of like things do happen for a reason, but I'd be interested to hear a little bit of your transformation too, going from one Olympics to the next. Like, that's got to be super transformational, just your mindset and your physical too. You have to change the way you train as you age and as you get older too.
Yeah. Each Games has definitely been different. Like, when I made 2014 Sochi, I was a twig. Like, they used to, I forget what our ski tech called me. He called me like pencil or something. Cause I didn't have a lot of mass. I was 20. I like started working out, but I didn't know how to put on mass. I didn't really have a proper guide on that. And I just made the team. Like, I wasn't on the national team. So I just kind of made it on my own, which I was just stoked to be there. So for me, Sochi was my like, hey, I'm here. Let's experience it, do our best, but like, let's make the most of it. And then 2018, I had 4 great years of training leading up to that. I felt good. I was a little bit bigger, a little heavier, stronger. And I really was excited and hungry going in. And that, unfortunately for me, was not like the best performance wise. I had one pretty good result, but in my best event, I really fell short and crashed in the course. And what kind of saved me from spiraling down is knowing that, you know, I did everything I could. Like, I really gave it my best effort and just wasn't able to pull it off. but after that, I was a little beat up and tired, but I had to go right back into training because I was on the national team and they were like, nope, you're not taking any time off, which I like agree, disagree, whatever. But that at the, you know, looking back, maybe wasn't the best plan, but, you know, went back into it, got to the strongest I've ever been in my life. And then had a string of injuries that kind of still like affecting me till this day. And, you know, I think in many ways I'm, you know, I'm wiser, I'm still strong, but like 2018 was kind of like my peak, like that era was like my peak performance. And then just the last few have been kind of just hanging on and just, you know, giving that effort in, but being a lot more strategic. So that's kind of been the, excuse me, the evolution of everything in my career, and we'll see what the next chapter holds.
So for your training, when you're talking about putting on mass for certain, for some of these years and some of the years you weren't, you know, as strong or as bulky, what's important for your world? Was it to just be strong through your glutes and core, like most skiers? Like, what were some training principles for you?
Yeah. Strong quads, strong glutes, really good core. I mean, those are like so important. You know, skiing's weird because you don't use your upper body as much, but you still want that to be strong because we crash a lot. Like, you're not supposed to, but honestly, like we crash quite often. I mean, it's part of that finding that line of of, you know, you're going so fast on the edge, but you're not going over it. And I just apparently like going over the edge. So making sure the body's well-rounded and strong, but there's kind of two factions you go into in skiing. You're either more of a speed skier or more of a tech skier. Now the speed races are the downhill super G, which you're going 60, 70 plus miles per hour, even faster sometimes. Like we were getting way over 75 in Beijing, which was pretty insane. So you want that mass, you know. You like, we're not necessarily looking to have a six pack. If you're in that, I mean, six packs are nice, but at the end of the day, you know, you want to be kind of a strong block of mass, able to handle those forces, to be able to drive through those turns. Where if you're more of a tech skier, that's the giant slalom and slalom, it's a little bit of a quicker turning radius, kind of a quicker movement pattern. You're not going as fast. So you still want to be strong, but you might want to be a little lighter. You don't need all that extra mass necessarily. So, you know, they don't necessarily conflict, but you kind of go into one side or the other. And I ended up being more of a speed skier. So I wanted to put on more mass myself and be able to, you know, handle those forces. And honestly, again, from the start, I didn't like to turn. I was like going straight anyway. So
I freaking love it. Well, and I love that description of the different disciplines in the sport. And like, whether or not people listen and understand downhill skiing or any of this, it really doesn't matter. But what matters is, you know, the physiological needs for the different disciplines, and you didn't necessarily compete in all of them, but you know the difference in them. And I think and this is for parents and maybe young coaches out there, when you're looking at athletes and what they want to be good at, I'll never forget during my grad studies, one of my advisors and professors always spoke to like waiting to see the body type of the athlete before you specialize. And specializing is such a big thing in our culture right now. There's a lot of money in specialization for clubs and stuff like that. But you get a kid that grows up and he's only going to be 5'8" and kind of stocky, you know, basketball, he might love it, but for end of the day, overall performance is probably not going to work out. So I think just understanding the sport that you're in and the needs of that sport, it's going to be a theme. It's always been a theme on the podcast here. But I think it's really important for people to understand. Off of that, what are some training sets like? Quad, you're doing a lot of hard work to build up quad. If you guys have ever seen like a speed skater or a downhill skier or any of the track athlete down near the Olympic Training Center, I mean, quads are just freaking nuts on these athletes. I'm sure you're right in the same category. So what give me a couple sets. Like what would be a normal gym set, like walking in when you're like at peak training, just so people have an idea that the type of work you're putting in.
Yeah. I've always loved my strength days. They've always been my favorite. I love a good deadlift, a good squat, you know, leg press, whatever it is. That's always my favorite. And one of my favorite like strength workouts was that, you know, we hit it hard. So, you know, we weren't supersetting much. It was going in deadlift and you're doing like a, you know, eight, six, four split or something, or it might even be a little less than that. It might, you know, you might just start at five and go five, you know, three, three, and then you go for like as many as you can get at a high weight at the end, which is, you know, usually only one or two. And then I love to pair deadlift and like a leg press, like, you know, you do deadlift, then you go to leg press, and then you do kind of something a little, you know, easier offset just to cool down. And then look, I always love getting a little arms in there. I know it's not necessarily the most important, but I think you need to do things that make you happy as well. So adding a little arms at the end, whether it's a, you know, tricep dip or, you know, some bicep stuff, I think that's really important. But, you know, I just basically being strategic, because if you injure yourself in the gym, that's like the worst case scenario. You know, if you're going to injure yourself, do it while you're, you know, skiing or racing. Well, don't injure yourself at all, but if you're going to do it while you're actually doing your sport, not in the gym. So be smart about it. But yeah, just going in and, you know, I love max effort days. I love deadlifts. We have a pit shark at the training center, which if you probably haven't seen it in your local gym, if you're listening, it's not very common, but it's my favorite machine that I've ever used, where you're doing a squat movement pattern, but you wear a belt and everything's from kind of the waist down instead of loading your back. And amputees inherently, you know, you try your best, but you get a lot of hip and lower back issues. So being able to take that load off and not load it all the way through the spine,
Awesome.
Really was game changing for me. And I could put up weight that I never had been able to, like just doing a regular squat, because no matter what I do or try, like just putting that weight through, you know, prosthetic leg is, you have limits. Like the foot that I use for working out is designed for someone that's over 300 pounds. I'm not close to that. I'm way under that. So, you know, kind of just shows the forces you put through.
What was that machine again?
Pit Shark.
Pit Shark.
PIT Shark. Yeah. Not super common, but it honestly, it's one of my favorite things I've ever used. And, you know, you can kind of simulate it with the leg press in a way, because you don't load the spine the same, but you're actually like squatty. You're going through that motion. You just load it lower down, which is pretty sweet.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, on the flip side, and we can circle back to this, I love my circuit days, and I can go more into that in a moment, but I love my circuit training, and I'm pretty sure Sammy's seen a few, or seen me do it once or twice at the training center where I take up half the turf area. But you know, you gotta always change it up and have fun along the way.
All right, so let's talk about circuit in a second, but I kind of want to go, and Sammy, you can chime in on this stuff too, because you've trained in a lot of the same ways. But when you're talking about doing like a heavy deadlift day and you're doing like low rep stuff, 8, 8, 6, 6, 4, 4, 2, couple mega, you know, whatever you end up doing, what do you see? Well, first of all, what kind of recovery were you giving yourself between sets? Because you said you weren't supersetting a lot of those, so you're just hitting it hard, recovering, hitting it hard, recovering. What kind of recovery were you giving yourself?
Yeah, so those heavy days, good couple minutes, like because I want to be coming back fresh. And especially like my favorite was doing deadlift and leg press on the same day, but hitting those both hard. So I had to make sure I gave myself enough time so that, you know, everything could kind of refresh a little bit and I could hit it again. And this was in the, you know, the midst of my training, like the peak, you know, off season training, like, you know, when I'm first starting at the end of the season or when I'm starting to taper off, we're not doing that. It's, you know, and Sammy, I mean, I'd love to hear too, you know, kind of what some of your, you know, like your intro or teetering, you know, things were, because, you know, every sport's a little different, but like when I would first start out, you know, we would be doing, you know, high volume, but low weight. And then, you know, that was fine, but I really loved the you know, lower volume, but really increasing that weight, because I find you do a day or two of that a week. And, you know, when you're doing that, it changed, like that's where you make the big gains, like the real strength gains. At least that's what I found. So,
well, I knew the answer to the recovery piece, but so many people who want to see the physical gains in the legit strength work, they, you know, we all get addicted to our endorphins. So we get addicted to like more of an interval type, style type training. And for like the general population, it's probably fine. Like you got 30 minutes at your local gym, you want to go bust it out. But if you want to put some mass on, you've got to go heavy. You've got to go low reps. Every rep has to be challenging. You know, when you go do an interval set or you go do a circuit day, like the whole workout's going to be challenging. But when you're doing these heavy days, like every rep has to be something where you look at the weight and you gotta like rewrite your will before you freaking go grab the bar, you know. But then given that legit recovery, and it's hard to be disciplined enough to give yourself 2 to 5 minutes, like 2 to 5 minutes is a normal recovery for heavy stuff. So it's hard to be disciplined enough to do that. So you gotta have a plan on what you're going to do. Yeah, you can go hit a little bit of upper body and stuff, but you really want your full body to recover off of these efforts to be able to go back and lift that heavy weight. So I think I just see so many athletes and so many individuals not figure that out, whether it's at the, you know, civilian level, normal lifetime fitness type training people, or people who are trying to hit some big goals that don't understand the principles behind recovery there.
I think it's important too to say, like, yeah, like you weren't, when you might be racing and competing, you probably weren't doing those big heavy lifts. Like that is your base training. You have a time of the season that you are loading up and trying to really build that base. And I think a lot of people don't always see that. And they're like, oh, I need to lift heavy all the time. Or they get so focused on doing one thing versus another. And it's like, you kind of do need to cycle through and have that time where you're really trying to build that base and then maybe transition into a little bit more higher reps, less weight. So having different flows, I guess, with the way your training is. And that was one thing that was really beneficial for me, was having a program to say, okay, we're going to have a 4 to a 6 week program. So we're going to change and maybe start with a higher rep, and then we're going to work our way up in weight and go down in reps. And for me, I was like, okay, that built my confidence in loading up those heavier weights and building up to those sets where I was having heavier load on knee, because that was something I wasn't used to as a female, realizing that lifting was so crucial to what I was doing. And also it can be beneficial for injury prevention, but it also can hurt you. So being able to work up to that, and it's not like, oh, I'm just going to go in and just all of a sudden start heavy. It's building up into that, having a program to where you're working into those sets and feeling confident with that weight and not overdoing it on your joints. Cause it can be a shock to the system if you're not having the correct form. And all of that. And then having, when you are competing, you're not going in to do those huge lifts. Your lift is added on to, you know, your skiing. It's kind of that accessory work to help with injury prevention and keep that strength, but not necessarily in that aspect of the season to your base is already there and you had to build that base. So now you're kind of running off of what you've built and that consistency, that a lot of people don't see, but is very important.
Yeah. Yeah. Just maintain strength throughout a certain season. Cause I mean, you know, you can lose strength in a week or two. It doesn't take very long. So that maintenance phase when you're in heavy competition and just the concepts of pre-post and end season type stuff, training and the goals of those three different cycles is important. But it's not common knowledge, not even close. So it's kind of interesting. We've been talking about this for like 20-30 years and it's still not common knowledge. I mean, I literally, and she listens to this, it's not a slight on her, but she had a conversation with a new client and she was asking about static stretching. And she was asking about lifting as a female and like feeling like she was gaining weight from the lifting, not even actually having objective numbers, but just feeling like she was gaining too much weight. And this is before I just started working with her. And it's like, yeah, like a lot, we got to come at it a little more objectively on what our goals are, because build muscle mass is never going to be a bad thing for any athlete, whether it's endurance or power. And I don't know, Sam, we've talked a lot about that with women in general, but it's worth saying for sure. Heavy days are fun. I played baseball in college, like enjoyed them until I didn't, you know, like off season. Cool. But if I got to go throw a ball and run fast after some of these heavy days, like, no, it's not going to happen. So just understanding that cycle is important. But you were talking about, Tyler, some of your circuit days. And I've always been a fan of like just freaking getting after. Like I remember doing even to this day, just crazy sets just to see how much I could put out there. So I want to hear what some of your circuit days look like and what the goal was with these days, you know?
Yeah, this is where I really got creative. And I feel like with what I'm about to say, I have to like, you know, preface it with a little warning or not that, you know, you have to do the fundamentals first. You have to build the basics. Like I got super creative and basically was trying to push the realms of the gym because I knew I was pushing the realms on the hill. So that was kind of my focus and goal. But, you know, if you're just going out and trying to get healthier, trying to get stronger, just keep that in mind that, you know, you want to be strategic with everything you do and that don't just immediately jump into what I'm about to say because it sounds cool. Make sure you got the fundamentals. Cause I assure you, like, I didn't just go into these crazy circuits, cold at the end of the season, but I had two different circuits I would do. It kind of depended on my block of training and phase and all that. I either would do a straight like Metcon. So 3 to 4 exercises you're on for, you know, 30 seconds at each one, or, you know, we even had a longer one where we were on a minute and a half each one. And then you take that amount of time off. You run through somewhere depending on which one you were doing and where you were in your phase, you know, 6 to 10 times run through that. And you're gassed at the end. Like, this is like, you know, you're doing sled pushes, med ball throws, agility ladder as like your exercises. And you're toasting your body, but it's good. It feels good. And you're being, you know, smart with the weight. So that was one path. And that was fun, but my favorite one and one that Sammy might remember a little bit is I would build these obstacle courses in the gym, and it would be like Bozu balls, agility ladders, boxes, and I'd even have sleds in there for pushing. And basically what I would do is I would run through it as fast as I could, take, you know, whatever my allotted break time was. Usually this was a bit more just so I could come back fresher. Cause again, this was to simulate my ski races as best as I could. So simulate my on snow training. Obviously I'm not pushing a sled down the mountain, But, you know, just simulating that heart rate up, trying to have to go through that set path and then getting to calm down and do it again. And those were fun. Those were insane. Like, it would, you know, I'd do like a string of box jumps into an agility ladder, run around some cones, start pushing, you know, a sled down, and then come back through an agility ladder. Like, some of these got like super creative. And this is just where I found in the gym that, you know, I don't like cardio. I get really bored with it, but this was a way for me to get that, you know, cardio conditioning that I needed for skiing, but do it in a fun way that still mimic those movements as best as we could.
I remember watching some of your Instagram stories and seeing you like go through these obstacle courses and agility. And I'm like, I don't even think I could do that with like both of my like real legs, and you're an amputee doing this. Like, it was so impressive. And I love that you just have like, you make it fun. Like, that's what people need to remember. Like, the gym doesn't have to be this like miserable place. Like, you can make it fun. You found a way to incorporate something that like challenged you and that you really didn't like, and found a way to make it fun and something that you enjoyed, which I love.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you see the benefits, you know, right off of those efforts, like, you know, if you're running hills on a treadmill, 1-1 intervals or something, but you can recreate that physiological response out on the turf with a freaking obstacle course. I'm going to pick column B every single time. Me and my buddy, we used to remember Jeremy Grev.
Sammy?
Yeah. So we used to do this set. So we put our Garmin heart rate monitor on, and we put our watch on, and the goal, this was pretty crazy, honestly. Like, the goal was in 30 minutes on the turf. So we'd bring out some med balls and some boxes and stuff like that. And the goal was to get 600 calories burned in 30 minutes. And I don't know if you've ever burned 20 calories a minute, but it's freaking brutal. And like, I'm 200, around 200. So I can put out some effort. So the way we would do it is we both go out there, we'd start the watch, and I would come up with the first drills, whether it was ladder, sprints, jump. And I would go until I couldn't freaking talk anymore. And it's like, all right, you pick one. And we just trade off until we did it. And we didn't hit it all the time, but the days that we hit that freaking 630 was just nuts. And it's just, that's one of the things that's really hard to do on your own too, if there's not any kind of competitive angle to it. So just bringing other people that aren't afraid to get after is always, always huge. I think what you guys will find, cause you're both kind of retiring right now, athletically, at least at the highest levels, you know, is that you're going to really miss being able to go push with somebody in a gym where there's other people and there's good energy. It's just, it's a different world when you get out of it. And it's been 20 years since I freaking finished playing college sports, and I still miss that to this day. I try to find friends that I can ring up and know that we're going to really get after. And unfortunately, my friends are getting younger and younger. So most of them are like 10 years younger now, the ones that really want to get after it. But but you guys are going to definitely miss that. I just love hearing that you're able to do that down at the training center and get some results out of it. It's pretty sweet. Sammy, do you have any big training questions from him? I was going to go more towards some fun, personal quick hitter questions if you don't, but I'm happy to go down.
No, I don't have any questions, but I did want to bring up like the fact that Tyler does, at the Olympic and Paralympic Museum, which I think this is great. He's, started doing these morning workouts for the community, and a lot of the kids would come in. And so he would bring some of the agility stuff and get kids involved, and just seeing videos of that, I think that that's so great that you are involved with that and trying to help start get kids moving, getting them to learn this stuff, getting them involved in the community, and they get to meet a Paralympian in the process. So I think that that's just really admirable that you make time, because I know you are so busy with your training. So for you to be able to incorporate that with them and be able to do that, I think that's really cool. And yeah, that's just... Sweet. The community needs more of that to be able to get kids moving, get off and away from a screen.
And then are people showing up?
Yeah. So we did it for like a month and a half last summer, kind of leading into the Tokyo Games. And it was awesome. I mean, some days, yeah, we only had a couple trickle in. But at first we were like trying to figure out the structure, but it kind of just turned into, I set everything up, I'd run through it, and I basically just like, I see someone, hey, come on over, like come run through this with me, and, you know, get them all nice and sweaty before they go in the museum. But you know, it's again, I love, you know, what you're saying about having fun, because that's been my philosophy. Like, you have to have fun with it, like with what you're doing and with the training, and always, you know, kind of change it up to make sure you're not getting bored. But I think it's so important, you know, promoting healthy living, you know, just being active. I think that's something that we've lost a little bit, kind of in the recent, you know, years, and just, you know, showing a little glimpse of what my training is and just getting, you know, folks involved in it. I think that's super important. And, you know, when the weather is beautiful in Colorado outside, like, you can't beat it. So I'm hoping we'll bring it back this summer. It's kind of on my agenda, but you know, we'll see what the summer brings. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if once we get into the summer months, you know, if you see me out there with some agility ladders and hurdles, you know, come say hi and you know, be ready to sweat a little bit.
Love it. Hey, Tyler, did you know Sammy's 30 now?
I did. I think I did. I think I wish you happy birthday when you turn, but I don't know. As Sammy can attest, we've been so like focused on our goals. Sammy just has had a little time outside of hers, but oh my gosh, what's it like being 30? I mean, I'm not far behind. I'm right behind. I'm like 2 years behind.
Okay. So you'll be there soon enough. I mean, I was already waking up and joints were hurting. So, I mean, I was kind of already used to that, but now it's just the number. But.
Oh shoot, I'm already there. Darn.
I was invited to your party. We're out of town though, Sammy. We're traveling a little bit, so we'll have to hang out soon. All right, I got some quick hitters for you, Tyler and Sam. While I'm asking these, if you have any that are like in the same realm, then just let me know. But I have like seven or eight that I'm just kind of curious about. Some of them are real, some of them are whatever. How's personal life, dude? Are you single, dude, or?
I am single. Haven't had time or made any progress on that front. So hit me up if you like. You know, if you're interested about a one-legged Captain America, you know, I'm your guy.
This is your guy right here. Yeah. All right, we got to make this happen, Sammy. Come on. All right. Before I was dating my wife and single for all those years, the first 3 or 4 years in Colorado. Yeah, I didn't do setups. Don't set me up with anybody. It's got to happen organically, dude. That's too awkward anyway. Yeah.
All right. You and Lauren met on a chairlift.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we did. Get on the chairlift, yeah, baby. You know how to ski.
It hasn't worked for me all these years. I don't know what the secret is. What's the secret?
It was pure fate, dude. Like I was. Have you skied Breckenridge?
So I've skied most places.
I figured. So we were up at the Imperial Bowl on a legit powder day. And my wife is a really good snowboarder. She grew up here. She used to hit the park all the time. Like she can hit anything on the mountain, no problem. And I noticed this girl in front of me. She's eating some like blueberry pancakes because she's talking to some dude in the line. Like I was by myself. She's by herself. Just people talking in the line. Powder day. Everybody's just trying to get up there. And I thought it was funny. Like she's like pancakes everywhere, like on her face everywhere. And if you know her now, it makes so much sense. It's freaking hilarious. And then go up chair six and we just drop down Imperial lift, which is like 100 yards below. So you like barely strap in just to get down there because we're both on boards. And, you know, my mind's eye, I can remember exactly like this person in front of me. There's nobody else in line. She fell at the base of the chair lift, which she never falls ever. Like even today, I don't remember her falling ever. And the time that it took me to catch up because she was getting up was enough for us both to be on the same chairlift. So we took it to the top, dropped in, memorized her number. Boom. That's how it happens. So nice. Keep on getting on them, buddy. All right. So what is the fastest you've ever gone on skis that you know of?
I'm pretty sure that was actually in Beijing and it was just under 80, I'd say just under 80 miles per hour. I'm not 100% sure, but I was clocked at like 77, 78, and I might've gone a little more than that. I'm not sure. So pretty close to 80.
I think I've hit 35, 45 on a board, and that's quick on a board, like for everyday stuff. I've been 45 on a road bike. That's fast as crap. I mean, that is hauling booty, dude. But your feet are away from the ground by like a half inch or a couple, you know?
Yeah.
What's it like? So what's that feel like to you? How far ahead are you looking? Like what's going through your head?
So thankfully we inspect the courses before we run them, because if you're running, you know, 70 plus honestly on anything and you don't know like what the next bend or turn is, it's sketchy. But yeah, you know, you, like again, be in the moment, you focus on your fundamentals. Usually each run or each race I'd have like one or two things I'm focusing on. So whether that's, you know, making sure I'm driving forward, something with body position, just holding my tuck, like, you know, just being that aerodynamic position, whatever it is. So like kind of right as I go out of the start or before I go out, I'm like, okay, you know, drive the hands forward, you know, hold that turn, whatever that cue was, and then go. And then as I'm going down, that's in my mind. That's what I'm thinking about. And I've already learned the course, or at least had a chance to visualize it, to, you know, slide through it. And, you know, I usually know, you know, what the trouble areas are. We get a report kind of after a few racers have run, but yeah, it's like, focus on those fundamentals and hold on for dear life. Like there was, we had a world champs in Lillehammer this year, and three turns in, you just drop like off, like almost off a cliff, like just a jump, and you're just flying through the air. And the first time I hit it, they were like, yeah, you're not going to catch much air. You'll be fine. And I flew on that sucker, like halfway down to the next turn, like much further than any of us were expecting. And I had to get right back into it, cause that was just the third turn, like in a, like, you know, a minute and a half course. So, yeah, just kind of focusing on that. And, you know, at the bottom, you're like, I'm pretty crazy I'm kind of stupid to do this, but you don't think about that when you're in the moment.
Well, it doesn't even look real. Like when, and you know, like the Olympics is the place where most general population watches skiing or like just kind of your fringe sports. But when you watch the camera angles and, you know, people are hitting jumps that are like a couple hundred yards being 4 inches off the ground, that's how fast they're going. It's just nuts to me, man. Like it's kind of waking me up just hearing you talk about it. Nothing like to watch mountain biking, crazy stuff, skiing, crazy stuff, like fat speed. And then like Corbett's Jackson Hole, like watching people jump off of Corbett's Caloris, like, holy crap. There's some people that have a different capacity out there, which is pretty sweet. I'm glad I didn't do it when I was younger, because I probably would have been addicted to the speed, to be honest with you, because I've done a lot of stupid shit too. All right, what's your worst crash ever?
Oof. Gosh, I've had a couple. luckily I've walked away from all of them. I'd say worst, like injury wise was, what was that? That was end of 2018. That was after like a great summer of off season training. And I hooked a gate and I wasn't even going that fast. It was like our second day of official training and it didn't look like a whole lot, but just the way I twisted off of it, messed up my PCL and my hamstring on my, prosthetic side. And, you know, I still have, like, it's healed, but I still, like, there are times if I overwork it or just step wrong, I can still know that I injured that before. And it took forever to heal that. And then right now what I'm working through is in January, right after World Champs, we went to Sweden for a World Cup and, I blew out of a course and was skiing off the side, went off the side, didn't think it was much of a drop, and it like was an actual drop, like not even like a jump, like it would just drop down, land in the soft snow and messed up my shoulder. So luckily it's like healed ish, but it's super weak. And I mean, we've been working on this for like 3 months. Like I was basically in PT every day in Beijing, getting work on basically, you know, just patching it up to get me through the games. So
yeah, that sounds rough. That's why retirement's good. All right. So any adaptive athletes out there that you think are a really good follow, like on the socials, or that are really inspiring right now to you?
Oh gosh. I mean, you know, I follow a lot of people on social and it's hard, like, you know, hard to think of some off the top of my head, but you know, just, I think in general, just, you know, looking out there, and I love seeing what everyone else is doing. You know, I have to say, like, one of my idols, which it's kind of cheesy because I think he's like everyone's idol in a way, but is The Rock. Like his workouts are insane. And then I'm a big fan of cheat days, so I love seeing his cheat days. But like, like low key, like my goal now that I'm like entering retirement is there's a photo of his quads and they're just like jacked, like beyond. And I'm like, well, if I can get one of my one quad like that, that would be pretty epic. So that's like a very far off goal, but then again, making the Paralympics was kind of a far off goal. But you know, I follow a lot of his stuff, but really anyone in the fitness community that's doing, you know, creative, but also strategic and, you know, fundamentally sound things, I think that's just really important. And follow athletes. Like, honestly, like a lot of Olympic and Paralympic athletes post their workouts, which maybe we shouldn't do, but we like doing anyway. So following them and just getting a glimpse of kind of what they do, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have any pet peeves in training or sport, generally speaking? It could be, like, for me, a lot of it comes from just bad information, or just like people who have a little influence, but just figured out how to do a calf. I saw a coach the other day, Sammy, you'll get a kick out of this. So Tyler, the way me and Sammy met is she was dealing with some brutal shin splints in high school, and her mom knew my wife. And they introduced us, and we just worked on it and got rid of it in a couple of weeks just from doing some tip anterior stuff. So like toe raises, just some biomechanics, just basic form, really simple formula. Like, it's nothing, there's no rocket science. But this guy who's a running coach, who's got a huge following, said that he coached less people. He said he just went to the PT and learned this amazing new exercise. It was a toe race. And I was like, what is going on here? I just had this theory that so many online coaches, if you put an athlete in front of them in person, they would not know where to start and how to coach them. They're just programming and copy and pasting training sets and workouts and stuff. So for me, that is a huge pet peeve. People who say they're a coach, but they could never get in front of a person. Like, to me, that's not really a coach, but you might be a programmer, but you're not a coach, you know? So yeah, what do you got? You got anything good that we can, without throwing too many people under the bus?
I mean, kind of echoing off of what you just said, I hate cookie cutter stuff. Like, I really don't like it, especially being in the adaptive community, the Paralympic world. You know, what works for me is not going to work for the person next to me. Like, even on our team, like, our workouts vary so much dependent on our body, our disability, just what we're looking, what our goals are. So if you're just going off of cookie cutter stuff, okay, maybe if you're just looking to get into it, that's an okay start. And I think that's even pushing it, but just, you know, taking out what your goals are in your body composition, I think that's like a huge miss. But kind of going, you know, far beyond there, you know, if you see me in the, I love to spend a lot of time in the gym, you know, and that might be like catching up with others. That might be, you know, doing my like warm up, my cool down, whatever. But when I'm in, like when I'm on, I'm on. And I just hate when people come in and just waste time. Like, they're just not focused. They're not putting the effort in. Like, there's a time and a place to catch up. But if you're in the middle of a workout or on your set and you're just wasting time like that, I don't know. To me, that's like my biggest thing. Like, if you're not putting the effort in and you're expecting results, and you're in the wrong place.
Oh, that's such a good point. Like, and especially if you're busy, like, I have two kids and I have a couple businesses, and like, I'm really busy. And if I set an hour aside to go work out with you, like, when we get in there, let's go, man. Like, we can talk in between sets. If it's one of those workouts where you can breathe a little bit, but let's focus on the time, man. You get so many people are wasting time at the gym for sure. What about you, Sam? You got anything good?
Pet peeves.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something Carl
doesn't.
Too.
When Carl doesn't do this, when Carl doesn't do that.
I mean, just a random pet peeve that I don't like is people clipping their fingernails or toenails in like public places. I was on a flight coming back from a competition, and this guy next to me starts trimming his fingernails on the flight, and I just like, I lost my mind. I was like, I already can't stand. I'm like, you do it over the trash can. That's the only place you do it.
That is so disgusting.
Dude. Oh God, it was terrible. I know that's like completely irrelevant to, you know, working out, but just personal hygiene, people, come on. Like, I don't want your nails all over me on a flight.
Well, it's crazy, 'cause I've only worked in like big gyms for probably out of my career, the first couple years, and then, probably 7 years in for a year. So probably 2 or 3 years total. But oh my gosh, man, like, people that do not know what they smell like in the gym. you need better friends to tell you what's up, because this is brutal. Yeah.
Oh, happens. We deal with that with fencing all the time. People just don't wash their kits. And then it's not white anymore and it's supposed to be white. Like, you need to go and shower with your clothes on.
So as a lifelong, I have kind of a new pet peeve, but it's also leading up to the next question for both of you guys here. So which one is more important? Discipline or motivation? And I'll tell you what my answer is after I hear what you guys think.
You go first, Tyler.
Oh gosh, no. Oh, that's not fair. Oh my gosh. I think discipline is more important, and my reasoning behind that is motivation gets you started. Like, if you're motivated, you get started, but if you don't have that discipline, you're not going to continue that. I mean, I always like look at motivation, and I think that's an important aspect, but if you don't have the self-discipline to like follow through on the programming or stay committed, I mean, shoot, if I didn't have the discipline, Sam, if you didn't have the discipline, we wouldn't be here. Like, we wouldn't be having this conversation today. So, I mean, motivation is a great starter, but it won't carry you through, my humble opinion.
Oh, absolutely. I get it.
I agree with that. The discipline, just to be able to consistently show up. Your motivation, like, I don't have motivation to work out every day, but like, I have the discipline to show up and know that, like, I need this for my mental health. I need to move my body. I need this to get better. I need this to improve. So having that discipline to just be like, yeah, I may not want to do it and I may not have the motivation, but if I'm disciplined and I'm consistent with things over time, like, that will build up and come together.
Amen. And I don't know how many times I've had clients tell me they're just not motivated to do the stuff. And like, just doesn't matter. Like, your motivation doesn't matter. It's what is it? Is it just magic? It's just gonna come out of the air one day. A couple things I know, like, when you set your alarm, it's going to go off in the morning, and waking up is discipline. Okay. You don't have motivation because you heard a loud noise and woke up. That's discipline to set the alarm, wake your ass up and go do the work. And I just think, me and my buddy were talking about this years ago, like, motivation is just a diminishing resource. Like, it may be there tomorrow, it may not, but if you set a schedule, the schedule is going to be there. And every high performing athlete I've ever known would give the exact same answer, because there's every high level athlete, there's 2 or 3 days a week that they don't want to put the effort in, but they do it anyway. And that's, I don't know why it's so hard, because I've been active my whole life and stayed in pretty good shape my whole life, but you still have to remind yourself sometimes, like, you got to do the work to feel good. You can't wait to feel good to do the work. And I'm glad you guys answered that how I wanted it to be answered, because it's such a pet peeve of mine, guys. It's crazy. Let's see here. Okay. Do you have any myths about adaptive athletes that maybe the general population doesn't realize? Cause I'm sure there are plenty for you.
Oh gosh. Yeah. And this one's kind of like a hot topic. And I'd be actually interested to hear both of your takes on this, but everyone thinks that just, you know, because we're adaptive and disabled, that we're their inspiration. So just because, you know, I'm missing my leg and I'm going out and, you know, following my dreams, that, you know, that the whole leg component, I guess, or the being disabled, like, if you think I'm inspiring because I'm working my butt off in the gym, like, I'm making these crazy circuits, that's awesome. But like, if you think I'm inspiring because I put my leg on each morning and then put my pants on, or try to remember to put my pants on, because some days I'm like, wait, hold on, wait, where are my pants? I don't know if anyone else has had a morning like that, but that's really awkward.
My kids every day.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad I'm on board with that. But yeah, just, you know, inspiration is good and all. You know, as Olympians and Paralympians, you know, we're, whether we like it or not, we're a lot of people's inspiration, but you have to be very careful with the adaptive community on that. Cause I've got so many friends that, you know, they're like grocery shopping and they're, you know, they're in their wheelchair grocery shopping, and someone comes up to them and they're like, oh my gosh, you're such an inspiration. Well, why? Cause we're doing what you do. Like,
so bad.
It's just, it's such a weird thing. So I'd say that's kind of one of the biggest ones. And the other one is, we have off days too. Like, oh my gosh, like, just back to our previous, you know, point about discipline. Like, we have so many off days, days that we're not interested or feeling up to it, days where my leg's not feeling like, you know, not fitting well, and we still get our butts out and do it. So, you know, like, everyone has off days. It's just what, you know, what you do about it. We're not, you know, these mythical heroes that some people put us up on a pedestal to be. I hope they don't. I've heard that they do, but I don't.
Yeah. No, yeah. Those are good points. The inspiration thing, I have a really good story about that here in a second. I think when you're talking about just seeing somebody and how they're going through a day-to-day thing and calling that inspiration, that would be freaking irritating for sure. Now, if Sammy's in the gym with you every day and she sees the work you put in, and then she decides, because she actually knows what you're doing, that you're inspiring, that's completely different. I think you're not talking about that.
Absolutely.
I had this. So the kid that I worked with, he was a wrestler, and wrestling is really tough because he had to take his prosthetic off before he got out there. And he had a birth defect that kind of made the bottom of his leg at a weird angle. So a lot of positions were weird, but he could get some leverage on people in different ways. Anyway, his dad was, I'm good friends with the family now. His dad was telling me when he's in eighth or ninth grade, he's at a wrestling match and he got his butt freaking, he got destroyed. Like, it was quick, and he's pissed off, and he's walking off the, he's walking off the mat and he's heading back to the where the team is or whatever. And this lady comes up and she's like, I just want to tell you, you're such an inspiration, like exactly what you're saying. And he just like, from the story, you know, he's like moody little 14, 15 year old kid. He just looks at her and walks away. And his dad's like, he's like, we appreciate the sentiment, but he just lost. And he doesn't need, you know, he doesn't want to hear that right now. His feelings are hurt like any other competitor would be. And that kind of brought it home a little bit for me, just like, yeah, it's gotta be irritating for sure. What about you, Sam? You got any takes on that right there? Have you had any interactions or seen anything similar or no?
I mean, a lot of times people, I just get more weird questions about like what sport I do, and people assume they're like, oh yeah, pentathlon. And I'm like, do you even know what that is? Like, they'll just kind of like, they kind of want to like assume they know. And just because you're training for the Olympics, you're an inspiration without you knowing, which, you know, if I can motivate and inspire someone else, I think that's great. I want to inspire them to get up and move, but I don't want them to just say I'm an inspiration. I want them to actually like be able to do something about it and help them be able to like move. And I think that's the thing people think, assume Olympians were like these like crazy people that, you know, we got here overnight and were these athletes. And it's like, no, we had to put in the work. We started somewhere. We were just a normal athlete. Like, I started working with you and like I had shin splints and injuries, and I was on like the bottom tier of varsity. And then I kept putting in the work. I had someone who helped me, give me good resources to change my form, change my technique, believed in me, gave me the right things to do. And I was like, I worked my way up. I wasn't like at 14 being like, I'm going to be an Olympian. Like, yeah, that was a dream and a goal, but I had to like put in the work to get there. And so a lot of times, like people say you're an inspiration, but you're like, can you actually act on that? And I want you to implement that to make your life better, so you feel better and you move more. So I think that would kind of be one thing too, that people are like, well, I can't do that. And it's like, well, you don't have to, you don't need to train the way I do. But you can still get up and move and do some things to help your body, so you're not in a wheelchair by the time you're 60 years old.
Yeah. And it happens a lot. It's crazy. No. And I think like for Olympians, like you guys, there's so many unique sports that nobody knows about. Like, I was working with Sammy her whole high school career. And after that, I had no idea what modern pentathlon was. I'm not gonna be able to teach her how to freaking fence and, you know, do the horse riding stuff. I have no idea. I know what the physiological needs are for a lot of those things. And of course you can train athletes if you know the needs. But it's all we're saying. Nobody gets there without putting the work on. And you guys have had probably unique journeys, and a lot of times it's kind of lonely training for the types of stuff that you guys train for, because you don't have a team around you necessarily. And the team that you are around, you're competing against, because they're individual sports in a lot of ways. It's just different. So kudos to you guys for sticking at it. I know the type of people you are just because of how far you guys went in your individual sports. So I think it's a great conversation today. Just kind of ending up here. Do you have any inclination of what's next for you, Tyler, in the next few years, or do you have any big dreams or goals you want to share? I'd love to hear them.
That's the $1 million question right now. Right. But I think we're going on like 2 weeks now getting asked every day, which is awesome. Like it's all good. You know, I kind of have the way I have it. I like to explain it. I know what I'm going to do for the short term. I know what I want to do in the long term. I just got to figure out that middle chapter. So short term, I'm back at the museum full time, you know, kind of honing back in on that and making sure that we're representing, you know, all of our U.S. Olympians and Paralympians well there, and continuing to, you know, serve the community in that respect. You know, I want to get back to my public speaking roots, because I haven't really been able to do it lately because of COVID and travel, all that nonsense. So that's a big one. And kind of my new chapter of, you know, fitness and training, like not having to take the winter off basically to go and do some skiing nonsense. So seeing, you know, how strong I can get, I think that's a big part. But long term, you know, I really want to better the, you know, the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic movements. I want to find a way that we can keep pushing that forward and being a positive driving force. So whether that's continuing to do that at the museum, whether I, you know, go to the, you know, U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee or do something in the training center, that's, I think that's the ultimate goal, is to just keep pushing the movements forward and, you know, making sure that the experiences I've had, the good, the positive, you know, the negative, the struggles, that other athletes are able to learn from that, or that the system improves upon that for future athletes.
Love it. Love it. Love it. All right, I got somebody you got to follow who I think is an inspiration legitimately. Her name is I never know how to say her freaking last name. Jackie Hunt Broersma. Anyway, she's a single leg amputee, and she's been running a marathon every day for 100 days. She's on day 85 or 86. And she's in North Carolina, but it's freaking, she does some of them on the treadmill, like when she needs a recovery day, but she still does a marathon on treadmill. But I think she's on day 86 or something like that. But we had her on the other podcast. I have a couple hosts that do a show called My First Ultra, and they had her on. But that's a really good follow if you guys are looking for a follow. If you guys want to follow Tyler, it's TC Ski USA. I almost said it TCS. USA like an idiot. That's what we all do with all these handles. It's like, what the heck? So give him a follow over there. Some pretty cool stuff. I saw you pulling the sled a couple days ago. Yeah, it's always a good
first
workout
back in retirement. So that was weird.
Oh, look at you. Retired at 28. I gotta figure my life out. These young retirees over here. Anyways, a great conversation, man. I think what I want to do with the podcast moving forward is be able to bring people back on when they have news, when, you know, life's a little different, when you decide something you want to do, if you're promoting, you know, some organizational stuff or things that can help other people, like just hit us up and we'll bring you back on. But Sammy, thanks for the introduction, of course. And you guys have a great day out there. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.